Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
My name is Miles Morales. I'm Brooklyn's one and only Spider-Man. And things are going great.
Oh, yeah. You were supposed to be here at 5.
All right, whatever.
Whatever?
Wow.
Whatever?
Miles's grades are pretty good. A in AP Physics.
That's my little man.
And a B in Spanish.
What?
Ooh, okay.
Miles.
Are you trying
Mira, to kill that's what
I gotta go. All right, bye.
He's lying to you. And I think you know it.
Danger. Miles!
Want to get out of here?
Oh! Gwen? So wait a minute. There's an elite crew with all the best spider people in it?
What? Who's the new guy?
This is unbelievable.
This is the lobby.
Miguel O'Hara.
The whole thing was his idea.
What's a guy got to do to join this spider team?
You can never be part of this.
Don't even get me started on Doctor Strange and the little nerd back on Earth 199999.
Come on, go easy on the kid. He had a terrible teacher.
Peter.
Miles.
Mayday. You have a baby?
I have a baby.
I'll take it from here. Miles, being Spider-Man is a sacrifice. You have a choice between saving one person and saving every world.
Send me home.
I can't do that.
I can do both! Spider-Man, always...
Not always.
What about Uncle Ben?
If not for Uncle Ben, most of us wouldn't be here.
Can't stop me now!
You can't run forever, kid!
I can't lose one more friend.
Miguel, this isn't what we talked about!
You knew?
I had no idea what you're doing!
Everyone keeps telling me how my story is supposed to go.
Nah.
I'm gonna do my own thing.
Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, the second movie in Miles Morales' Spider-Man trilogy, and a sequel to 2018's Oscar winner Into the Spider-Verse, swings into theaters this week. Joining us in this episode to talk about the design of the spider people and the movie's stylized look are production designer Patrick O'Keefe and character designer Chris Anka of Sony Pictures Animation. Columbia and Sony Pictures Animation's Across the Spider-Verse takes place roughly a year after the events in the first film and brings Marvel's Miles Morales back into the multiverse where he meets the Spider Society. Phil Lord and Christopher Miller are returning to lead the charge as writers and producers, and it's directed by Joaquin Dos Santos, Kent Powers, and Justin K. Thompson. The story concludes with Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse, a sequel scheduled for a 2024 release. I'm Carolyn Giardina. Welcome to the Hollywood Reporter's Behind the Screen. Welcome, Chris and Patrick.
Hey, how's it going?
Hello there.
So congratulations, and how does it feel to have the movie finally hitting theaters?
Thank you, and thank you very much for having us. It feels incredible. I've been on this thing for... just over 4 years and 4 months. And so it is an incredibly exciting opportunity to have this thing get out there and just see all the awesome artwork. And we're starting to see a reception starting to come in. And it's these films, we tend to push the envelope a little bit. And I think we get a little out of even our own comfort zone. And so to then see it being welcomed into the larger audience, into the world with a warm reception is a very... it's a relief, and then that gives way to excitement and a tidal wave of happiness.
Yeah, it still doesn't really feel real, you know? Like, I've been on this for a little over 3 years myself, and just been working on it at home this whole time. It kind of doesn't feel like it's a, you know, real movie that's coming out there, but we're here, and it's out there, and people are loving it, which is great. Hopefully it'll feel more real once, you know, it's actually, I'm seeing people actually see the movie.
What is it like working with the team, including, of course, Phil Lord and Christopher Miller?
Working with this team, this has got to be one of the most experimental teams I've ever worked with, unless I go back to like college. This really felt like we were making a ginormous blockbuster bespoke art film. And Phil and Chris really bring that attitude to the filmmaking process. They have this this philosophy that this is a film made by a lot of people, first and foremost. And so it is a group of filmmakers all working together, coming together. No idea is left sort of, no stone is left unturned. No idea is ever shut down. It's an exploratory process. We're always looking for opportunities to do more, to make it better, to push further and further, and by any means necessary. And so artists, editors, designers, even the actors are just, you know, there's a lot of improv happening. And I think that's what leads to some really great things, some really great ideas that would have never have, you couldn't plan for a lot of these things. They have to come out sort of organically through the filmmaking process. As well, they are the type of filmmakers who will back any great idea. And so we've had some really crazy ideas over the last 4 years that I think may have made some people uncomfortable. And they're like, yes, that's exactly where we should be going with it. We should be pushing as far as we can and trying out every idea we possibly can. And it can get a little chaotic at times, but I'm a huge fan of that because it really does feel like a group of friends and a group of artists that are just working together to create something without ego, something that is going to be something unique, that is going to be something experimental, that's going to be something that we enjoy making.
So the first movie had this bold comic book aesthetic that you built on in this film. Patrick, do you want to just start by talking about the approach to the visual style?
Sure. At its core, what we really wanted to do was make the authentic comic book experience for all of our fans and friends, and even for ourselves. You know, I remember as a kid reading comic books, and it's sort of like you're laying there, your mom's already told you to turn the light off, you've got the comic book sort of pressed up under your nose with your flashlight, you can smell the ink, you can see what's being printed, how the paper is being printed on, the little fibers and what are called the Benday dots and the line work. And it's this experience of comic books, not just necessarily how they look in the final process, but your experience in relationship to them. And so when it came to making the film, we really wanted to make an homage to the comic book making process and the experience that we have all had with them as fans, and share that love for those that didn't have it and kind of bring them into our world and our experience. And as such, we started sort of peeling apart the comic book in a lot of ways. In Miles's world, which is represented in the first film as well as this film, it's about bringing that, it's a modern kind of modern comic book technique. Those Benday dots, the line, the hatching, the line work, the more graphic style, the automatopoeia that are popping up, bringing all that onto the screen, but then celebrating the artists that make these things. And so I've always told everyone on the team and on the film, like, I want to see your hand. We want to see the evidence of the artist's hand that created the comic. And so we have characters that'll get sketchy in places. We have environments that'll sort of break down into sketches and just line work. And you can see, you know, even literally my fingerprints are in part of this film because I've smudged the ink that is going into the film, because that's really what's being done. The artist's hand is evident in every part. And so it's an ode to comic books, but it's sort of an ode and an homage and a love letter to how comic books and art is made in general. And then as we go through the different universes, the different Spider-Verses in this film, we approach them as sort of different eras of comic book making, different styles of comic book making. And what we really wanted it to feel like in this film, as opposed to the first film, was this feeling that you've walked into your favorite comic book shop and you're walking down the aisles and you're seeing all your favorite comic books, one next to the other. It is such a rich and diverse art form, comic book making, just like all the artists that are making it. I think it's one of the most diverse art forms there is out there. And so, again, sort of paying homage to that and where we've come from and representing all those different art forms in one film was a challenge, but a very exciting one.
Well, let's talk about some of the multiverse and some of the spider people. The first one, let's talk about Miguel O'Hara, who is one of the new spider people voiced by Oscar Isaac. Chris, do you want to describe his look?
Yeah. Miguel was, funny enough, Miguel was my day one assignment. So it was, you know, not daunting at all. But what was really cool kind of about how the whole process was started was he had appeared in the very post credits of the first movie. But with this movie, Phil and Chris and the directors involved really wanted kind of a new holistic look at everything. Just because things were done great doesn't mean things couldn't be done better the second time around. And so they really wanted me to just make my own sort of statement with the character and how I would approach. And so we kind of really started from a place of we can do anything we want. And, you know, the process was really fluid. We kind of like were working with, you know, Omar Smith, the modeler with it. We're kind of going back and forth. And we reached a point where like, you know, maybe we can add some more culture to the character and kind of really make sort of Miguel's Mexican roots a bit more evident in the actual design of the costume. And, you know, that was an incredibly sort of enriching sort of assignment, you know, to my earlier point of there was always another pass at characters that kind of elevated everything. And this was one of those of we had this cool suit that like that hit the mark, that did everything we needed to do, but then we could add so much more richness to it. And, you know, spending another good 6 months on this design and just looking into Mesoamerica and looking into patterns and culture and different motifs and kind of like how far can we add that to this design that doesn't overwhelm and break it, but to a point that, you know, there's like 4 or 5 levels of detail on this suit to really kind of like, you know, you look at it far away, it has a really clean silhouette, but you look at it a little bit closer, you start noticing a little more details, and you look at really close, there's even more details that sort of don't overwhelm, but add a little bit of complexity and a little bit of, you know, I think taste to it, you know, it has a fuller taste that, you know, there's kind of no part of it that feels not thought out. You know, I look at the design 2 years later and there's nothing about it that like, I wish I changed or I'm unhappy that we left it kind of on the cutting room floor. They're like, oh, everything that we had put in is there. Everything was thought about thoroughly and sort of made up with this design that I'm incredibly proud of. And I think it sort of like lives up to the kind of pedigree that the first movie sort of laid out.
And then Miguel lives in Nueva York. And I understand this was actually inspired by Sid Mead's work. Patrick, could you talk about that?
Sure. So the approach for Nueva York, again, we want to always go back to the roots and sort of celebrate where they came from. And Miguel O'Hara sort of was born out of the character in the world of Nueva York in the comics is sort of born out of this 70s, 80s futurism that many, many artists were a part of. Sid Mead being certainly one of the most famous. John Burkey as well was a big inspiration on this film. And so instead of just doing what the comics were, we kind of wanted to dive a little deeper and go back to that era of design and painting. A lot of those designers at that time, they didn't start as a comic book artist. Sid Mead didn't start as a film designer. They all started as industrial designers. And they were trained as industrial designers to design boats and cars and vehicles and architecture. And so I asked all the artists to sort of pick up this approach. Let's get our T-squares and our set squares and our drafting pencils and our thin inkers. And let's try designing this world from an extremely architectural point of view to represent this era, this retro, what would come to be called this sort of retro futurism, and put the artist's hand then on the screen. The reason for that, in addition to just going back to sort of that era and a callback and an homage to those wonderful artists that have designed so much and influenced generations, is looking at the character of Miguel O'Hara. He's this sort of authoritarian figure. He is a man who likes to have a plan. Things are done a certain way. There's a precision to everything, and he'd like everything to go according to plan. To me, that really spoke to that sort of industrial design approach to design and painting and overall the overall look of the film. And so leaning into those structures sort of helped establish who the character was. The environment, and I had this sort of philosophy that the environment should say the things that the characters can't. You know, a character can't come out and say, I'm an authoritative figure, and I like things a certain way. So we need to represent that in the set design. We need to represent that in the render script, and it'll help influence and express those things that the audience should be picking up on if we've done our job right.
So let's talk about Jessica Drew, Spider-Woman, voiced by Issa Rae. Patrick, could you tell us about her?
Sure, I'd love to. Jessica Drew's character is one of my absolute favorites on the film. Again, going back to what the film needed, we needed a strong character. This is an opportunity for Gwen Stacy from the first film, also Spider-Woman, to find a mentor. This film's a lot about mentorship and finding one's own path and defining one's own path. And so for the role of Spider-Woman, from Earth 332, Jessica Drew, we wanted to make a really powerful character, a very strong character. And when we discovered Issa Rae would be doing the voicing, it really sort of pushed and led the design. She's a pretty badass woman. She's riding a motorcycle. We wanted her to feel very luxe. Gwen is a very kind of DIY spider. She's an absolute pro, but she's a teenager, and she's kind of got her like Chuck Taylors on. Spider-Woman, we wanted to elevate to, in Jessica Drew's case, into this high art fashion, almost fashion illustration, very high art. So we put her in very expensive designer outfit. She's got the confidence to not wear a mask. She's one of the few spiders who has her face out there. She's got this awesome motorcycle. I always love to find artists that really know what they're talking about. I know nothing about motorcycles. And so we roped in Will Coyner, who is actually one of our character painters. He's a real bike head. And we had the initial designs of sort of what we needed for animation. I gave it to Will and was like, is this a motorcycle? Like, is this actually a motorcycle? What would you do here? What I need the motorcycle people in the audience to really look at it and say, yes, they recognize me. Oh, they did it right. And the thing with the fender is great. I don't even know if a motorcycle has a fender. But leaning into the expertise of the artist to bring that forward. And then for Jessica herself, we enlisted the help of Brian Stelfreeze, who's a fantastic comic book artist. Who does some fashion art design, does these beautiful ink washes, has a real confidence in his brush. As well, he's one of the artists who's done so many Black Panther comic books and has a real sensitivity and understanding of rendering darker skin and bringing, you know, he brought this excellent brushwork to the dense curls that are in her ginormous afro that just screams sort of power and confidence. And working with Brian, this veteran in the trade, gave us sort of the confidence to make sure we were bringing forth this character that just felt, again, powerful, strong, confident. So she could fulfill the role that she needs to in the film as this mentor to Gwen, whom is already one of, you know, these very powerful, confident women within the movie itself.
And then Daniel Kaluuya joins the cast as Spider-Punk. He's in a band. Would you tell us about his look?
Yeah, Spider-Punk was a really fun one. Speaking of mentors, my mentor, Justin K. Thompson, he is a punk. You know, I'm the graffiti head on the crew. Chris Anka is a real comic book encyclopedia. So I'm great when it comes to Miles. Chris will handle all the spiders. And Justin, production designer on the first film, now director, he grew up in this punk era. And so I got a real education on the punk era, which I missed out on as a being born in the 80s and being a hip hop kid. And he would bring in all these old punk posters and gave me books of punk posters. And what we, I, I thought he was just going to, I had like a really bad interpretation of what punk is. And I really went to school and we started looking at, like Misfits and Sex Pistols and old zines that were, he would bring in old zines that had been printed back in the day. And, the wheat pastings that would end up for punk shows on the, in London, on the sides of construction sites. And what we really wanted to do was encapsulate, again, that era and that way of making things. And so for some of the early designs for punk and his world, we would be, I had actually happened to go to London a few years ago and took just like 1,000 photos as I do everywhere I go. And we started printing them out and cutting them up and taping them back together in Xerox, cut them up again, tape them back together as Xerox. You can see staples within the film and even razor blades that have been left over and people's sort of scribbled handwriting to give it this real authentic feeling of that punk scene. And I always like to say, you know, there's this moment, punk's introduction. Well, it's really punk's interruption. He doesn't want to play by any of the rules ever. Throughout the film, he is changing into different famous punk posters that we referenced. He doesn't believe in consistency in any way, shape, or form. And because that's really the punk ethos, and it's something we wanted to embody and celebrate on the screen for him. And I think it worked perfectly with Daniel's performance, where he was doing a lot of riffing and a lot of improv. And as the look of the character doesn't follow the rules, neither did the performance.
And then the world itself is described as a mix of 70s and 80s era London and modern day New York. Would you tell us about that environment?
Oh, yeah. So just like punk himself, this world is a collage piece of artwork that you'd find pasted up on the walls of the punk scenes in London and New York. But now he lives in a world that is, all spiders tend to seem to live in a world that is a New York remixed with whatever they sort of bring to the table. And so while making the world, we were cutting up things like Times Square, but sticking Big Ben on it. The Tower Bridge of Brooklyn, these remixes that capture that era of London, but the scale of New York. You know, when you get to London, when you're used to living in North America, you kind of realize, oh, this is a lot shorter than I would have expected for these grand cities. So we gave it the not only the height of New York, but sort of the exaggerated height of the Spider-Verse New York. And so you have these, Big Ben is, you know, 500 stories tall, and on top of these glass and steel structures, you have these beautiful crown pieces with molding, and it's done with the crudeness that a punk poster would be, sort of a razor blade cut up of a New York City skyline with the Thames there instead of the East River with the Tower of Brooklyn Bridge crossing it. And it makes for a really fun sort of hodgepodge, haphazard environment for a spider to live in.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Chris, aside from the ones that we already talked about, what was a favorite character for you to design?
In terms of designs that I'm really proud of, like that I worked on, one new character that's getting introduced in this movie, Spider Bite, was, I think, a really kind of like breath of fresh air for me. And, you know, so the character is supposed to be this digital avatar that she's projecting into this world from her own home dimension. And it was really fun to kind of find a new way to express a digital person that I think then the VizDev artist with the, you know, Will Corner specifically really took that and ran far. And with how she's sort of like showing her colors and how her mood's changing and how we're sort of, you know, really aware of, you know, it's the irony of making a digital character in 3D. So like let's lean into the polygons of it and not sort of hide the fact that she isn't this digital being. And I think the design was so great coming from the comics. And so it was a really kind of fun, interesting challenge to sort of take this character who was able to sort of express herself in her own way and kind of always change how she looks, and kind of how does that sort of personify? So she was probably one of the big, but I mean, it's really hard for me given like I've designed so many other of the spiders. It's really hard to find like one. I'd say if another that's a highlight for me, it was the Sun Spider. And she's featured on the posters and she's going to have a fun time in the movie, but it was really sort of a great challenge and exciting moment when the assignment came down from Phil through Justin to me to we're going to add this character in there, and being able to make a spider who's differently abled was an incredible, you know, time, and really trying to find a way to authentically elevate and showcase this person, this character. And you know, I was snooping around the, you know, the creator's Twitter, and I was looking at people talking about this the character from the comics, and really seeing, you know, what were the elements, and you know, the compression shorts and the harnesses and the wheelchair, and really finding as much specificity as I could to make sure it was this authentic depiction. You know, you don't want it to feel like it was half baked, or you know, this design was just sort of something we threw out there. You really want every character, you know, we have that saying of, you know, anyone can wear a mask, but you want everyone to feel like these were fully holistic characters that anyone can sort of see themselves in. And you don't want anyone to like, oh man, I wish they had done something more, or, you know, with any of these characters. So that one was really kind of a fun and sort of humbling, you know, assignment for me of like, oh, this is actually like, I understood from the moment of like, oh, this is important. Of like, we need to make sure this is done well, this is done creatively, and it doesn't just sort of feel like an afterthought of a character.
And how many did you end up, how many characters did you end up designing for us, Chris? It's in the...
It is between, depending, because I don't know exactly how many make it to screen, it is between 150 and 180.
And rest assured, you drew each one of them at least more than one. So
yeah,
it certainly got your spider.
It was a great time, man. It's a great time.
What was the most challenging day for you, and what were you trying to accomplish?
I mean, in terms of challenging Miles, designing, like being asked to design a new suit for Miles was incredibly challenging. I mean, honestly, I don't know how much Patrick could see it. But I struggled with Miles for a long time. It was sort of A, daunting, but B, it didn't, like, they wanted, what was really nice about this movie and kind of the sort of operandus of the whole movie was, just because it was good doesn't mean we can't do a better job. And, you know, that suit from the first movie has become iconic at this point. And being asked of like, yeah, but like the fun of superhero movies is we get a new suit. Let's try something different. And I just could not get over that. I could not figure out how do I break the mold and do something different and new that still feels fresh and true to Miles. I did 84 designs for Miles, and it wasn't until 78 that it started to click for me. I'm like, oh, because I remember I turned in that last pass and I was like, now I got it. Now I understand what we feel like to do something that no one is expecting to see. And it was just like kind of how I thought about like, oh, change up the textures, change up the fabrics, change up kind of the breaking, change up the paint on the suit. Like, it was less so much of like, oh, I need to figure out how to make what was there work. It was more of like, just throw it all out. Just start fresh. Like, you're a 15-year-old kid who wants to make a new look for the year. And like, how do I just reinvent how I want to be? And it really kind of was like, oh, like, what if I start doing holographic paints? What if I start doing different fabrics that a kid would find in an athletic store, and kind of mix matching all of that together? And then from there, you know, the design went off to, I think, very hands on with both Justin, the director, and Will Kleiner. They kind of like took all of the elements I had sort of laid out, like, these are the fabrics, these are the cuts, and they sort of built that final suit out of it. But it was such a like whirlwind of a process to kind of get out of my own head of how do I live up to that first thing? But then being like, okay, no. Now I understand of like, just run with this and just kind of throw new things at the wall and see what sticks. And that was sort of like the exciting part of the whole movie, because the whole movie is sort of that idea.
And would you tell us about Pavitra?
Pav, as we've come to call him, Pavitra, is this lovable character. And he actually went through many, many rounds of design and many artists as, again, we always address these, we confront these sort of design problems, as sometimes I refer to them as what does the film need? And this Pav's importance in the film, he's a fully fleshed character. He's a totally amazing character. He's one of my favorite characters. He got better and better as the film went on, but was, what does he mean in relationship to Miles? And in this film, we wanted him to feel like a highly capable, a fully fleshed out character, somebody who's very confident, very strong, but very easygoing. And he sort of hasn't run into some of the troubles, let's say, that Miles has. And so we went through making him older and younger and finding the sweet spot where we never were turning him into a child. But he's a formidable ally that for Miles to have, and someone who can really hold his own. When it came to doing anything that we do, we always try to get to the source. And we never want to make judgment calls from an uneducated point of view. And so we were working with some consultants from Pav is Indian. And as we all learned, and some of us already knew, you know, there's no monolith that is India. It's a country that speaks 40 different languages, has countless different ethnic groups. And we wanted to be very specific and not just sort of gloss over it and say, we've got an Indian Spider-Man and here's your stereotype. And so we were working with cultural consultants. Many of the artists working on the project happened to be Indian, and they're just fantastic artists. And so we were leaning into their expertise and their knowledge as well. And as well, and when we got into the overall look and design of Pavitra and his world, looking into even the way comic books are printed in India that is different than they are printed here, the difference in the inks that they use and the types of papers that they use, and even they just have different brush pens there for some reason. It's just culturally a different place. And we love that stuff. Those differences are what makes this world a beautiful place. And I think what makes this film a beautiful place, a beautiful film, is that we embrace and sort of celebrate all those differences and don't look for the monolith, don't look to homogenize, but enjoy the differences and the eccentricities and the varieties that we have. And so Pavitra represents, you know, a slice of what that culture is. He doesn't stand for the entire culture itself, but he's a very fun, lovable character that celebrates who he is and where he comes from.
And then he lives in an area that you call Mumbatan, which combines elements of Manhattan and Mumbai. Would you talk about that look?
Yes. So Pavitra inhabits this incredible world called Mumbatan, and it's the combination of Mumbai and Manhattan. And we wanted to bring together the cultures and diversity of Mumbai to the heightened scale of Manhattan. And so we, you know, in the first film, we made this New York that is big, and it's an exaggerated version of Manhattan. Here we went 1,000 times further. There are buildings on tops of buildings and bridges headed in every direction. It's the perfect world for a Spider-Man to inhabit. It's densely full of traffic, you know, which is a very Mumbai thing to do, even more so than Manhattan. I think they would love the traffic problems of Manhattan and Mumbai. And putting in all those different cultures that we talked about. And so working with the team and our cultural consultants, we tried to represent as many different languages throughout the film, local languages. The signage is in Hindi, or it's in, there's lots of English as well, but it's in, I'm trying to remember all the different languages we use. I have a list of 40 of them somewhere, as well as representing the different cultures you have. Sikh, Indians next to Muslim Indians, all working, you know, living and working together, much like the world that is Mumbai. And we didn't want to make it ancient as well. You know, there's a Western tendency to make India feel like this ancient place. We really wanted it to feel like a modern, bustling metropolis. And so we have that mixture of old and new, these giant skyscrapers next to these ancient temples, and all of this world kind of coexisting at the same time.
And what was your biggest challenge or most challenging day?
Oh, boy, I had so many. Earlier, what Chris was saying was really true. This was a film in which we wanted to challenge ourselves on a daily basis, and we wanted to push the film as far as we could every time we could. And so I think the constant challenge for me was always like we would get something to a very good place where we felt it was really good, and always trying to then remove sort of the effort and remove the work away from the final product. I like to always tell the artists it's you're going to create this artwork and it's yours and you need to love it and be passionate about it. And then we're going to put it on the wall and it's none of ours and it's the film's. And is it what the film needs? And there is this challenge that happens where you see something beautiful and you see the hard work that was taken to create it. And it might not be the right thing for the film. And understanding the difference between great, good, great artwork and what is right for the film can be a challenge at times. And you can sort of mission drift into things you fall in love with. But is it truly what's needed for the film? And so there are all types of sets and ideas and probably hundreds of thousands of drawings that got us along the way there that you'd love to see on screen, but they weren't what was just right for the film in that right moment. And so there's this constant challenge to look at things with fresh eyes. And I think as you get entrenched in these films over 4 years, it's hard to see sometimes where this film needs to go so it can end up on screen and be well received. And as a first-time production designer, that was really my challenge, was not falling in love with anything until it was absolutely the right thing for the film.
Could you share a couple of Easter eggs we could look for?
And not in terms of where you'll find them, but Miles Morales' creators are Brian Michael Bendis and Sarah Pacelli. And as a graffiti artist, I take on the challenge of slipping in as many graffiti Easter eggs as I can throughout the film. And so both of their names are placed in a very awesome, big, noticeable spot that I'm hoping people will pick up. In terms of other Easter eggs, something we love to do is shout out the filmmakers as well. And so I believe all the filmmakers at some point in time have their name on a billboard or a street sign or a shop. I always ask the artists, just while designing sets, you know, think about this isn't just a tea shop. This is your mother's tea shop. And so put her into this. What would that be? What would that feel like? And find that authenticity there as well. Chris, any favorite Easter eggs you snuck in?
I mean, there's two. I didn't do them myself, but I asked for them. I think one really cool one is for people to look at the pins and the patches on Punk. Cause I think most of them are based on the art crew. So like all of our names are all over Punk in some of the pins, and that's fun. And another one that I didn't do, but it was kind of like a little throwback to me, was that I used to work for Marvel Comics, and one of the designs I had done for them was Miguel's second white costume. And so in the background of some of the scenes, you can see that he's working on that suit. So it's kind of hidden amongst sort of Miguel's stuff, but that was a really cool kind of thing to see that the great Vista artist sort of put in.
I think there are also some toys to look for in Mayday's crib.
Oh, there's some very cute plushes in Mayday's crib that are going to be an absolute hit. And one very silly one that's just a very random story is we're always making signs. There's millions of signs in this movie. I wish I were being hyperbolic. And we're always trying to connect it to the Spider-Man universe. And we made a real estate sign, and we were thinking, oh, the Watsons, there's the Parker and Mary Jane Watson. What if her dad was a real estate agent? And then, of course, we checked in with legal. We have to submit everything to legal, as you should. It turns out there's only one person who has the same name as their father in America, it would turn out, and he is actually a real estate agent. And so we had to pull it from the film, and I believe now Mary Jane's mother is a prominent real estate agent within the within Miles's universe. Silly little things like that that are sort of littered throughout the film.
What do the themes of the film mean to each of you? Chris, do you want to start?
Yeah, I think sort of the theme in very much it reflects on like the our of how we handled going into this movie as well, was, you know, kind of finding your own voice and sort of finding what you want to be. And you know, I think that's a very common problem with sequels. You know, I think, you know, sequels is this very big hill to climb of trying to be as good as or somehow reflect the first movie, but not finding your own voice. And I think, you know, one really cool thing about this movie was that the whole point was we needed to find kind of our own rhythm with it and not feel like we need to be beholden to what this sequel should be rather than make the movie that can be, that was the next extension. Like, basically, we had to grow up with the movie and have the movie grow up with us, which very much feels like kind of like what Miles is going through himself.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That's what it really felt like to me. You know, I said it was a first-time production. There's a lot of first-timers in first-time roles on this film. And I think that's a lot like Miles. He's in a position where it's the first time something so large is being asked of him. And this idea of that we're going to write our own story and we shouldn't be beholden to the way things have been done or what's expected of us, but we should go with our instinct and rewrite the canon if we need to, rewrite our destinies if we need to, and make something that that we truly believe in. And I see so much of the process of the filmmaking in the film itself and so many of the lessons I learned while making the film mean so much to me, just how to take responsibility and how to push and believe in ourselves as filmmakers. And I think that's something Miles really embodies, and so does this film.
Congratulations to both of you and the whole team on the film. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.